Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome one and all to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's the holiday weekend, which of course means we shall chain ourselves to the keyboards, the microphones and the speakers of this world, forgetting the fact that we talk about mobile devices so we can talk to you about mobile devices. Rafe, that's actually quite a nice summary of what we do, isn't it?
It is, and we're doing it with a Windows Phone specific focus, I think it's fair to say.
I believe yes, and we're trying to say all about them.
We do.
Because
the website is allaboutwindowsphone.com, and no, you, and there is no www, although you can put that in because it doesn't make any difference.
Tim Berners-Lee called it the World Wide Web. He didn't call it the All About.
That's true.
There we go. That's my new argument, and I'm going to stick with that at least for the duration of the show. And given that we have Rafe, that duration might be some time. What are we going to talk about? We're going to have a final touch on MWC. We're still feeling the sort of shockwaves and the echoes coming out from that event. GDC has just happened, the Game Developers Conference over in America, and there is some news on there, which is quite an important stepping point for Windows Phone, especially Windows Phone 8 as a platform going forward. We'll have the usual app of the week. We'll mention the website URL a couple of times, and I'm all about windowsphone.com, where you can leave your comments and stuff. Rafe will probably spend 7 minutes answering a question where I was expecting the word yes or no, and I will probably make 3 veiled references, one to Doctor Who, one to Blake 7, and one to Sex in the City.
Well, I'm sure you can fit all of that in.
Indeed. Right. Okay, Rafe.
Hang on a minute. Did you just admit to watching Sex in the City? That's horrifying.
No, it's not horrifying. You watch it on Fast Forward, it looks like a video for Georgia from the Eurovision Song Contest.
I'm still traumatized by the thought of you. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, Doctor Who starts again soon. That's good.
Indeed, yeah. And Rafe really is a carry, but there we go. I don't mean you're psychological in the shower with the blood coming down you.
Okay. These references just passed me by, so I'll just nod and say, yes, Ewan.
Why don't you tell us about March App Madness then?
March App Madness. This is something that's going on Nokia Conversation. That's Nokia's official blog. Kind of tying in with what I think is the basketball March Madness thing that happened in the States, which is a big tournament that happens every year. And for some reason, everyone goes mad and says that's the time to organise a contest and have brackets, which is actually code for apps being put up against another app and voted for, see which is the best one until you come down to one app. The All About Windows Phone app is included in this particular contest. We've just gone through the first round, I think, and actually, I think we've won. I don't know. The results aren't confirmed yet. But basically, Nokia is looking to find some of the best apps for the Lumia devices. We're actually up against some pretty tough competition, Ewan, so I admire a lot of the apps on there. So please vote for us, but we won't be terribly upset if you don't.
Now, Rafe, are you sure this isn't just a way for Nokia Conversations to have these 16 leading applications linked to them ferociously throughout the entire month when they're not getting any traffic, just to put their click rate up before the end of the financial year?
Well, that could be a rather cynical way of looking at it, but I suppose everything's possible. There's actually quite a few app contests going on at the moment. Microsoft are also holding something similar on Facebook. Actually, they've got some pretty decent prizes, and we're not involved in that, but our friends over at WP Central are, so do go and vote on that. You can do that on the Windows Phone page on Facebook, and actually it's called the Next App Star, and the finalist of that particular competition is going to end up in one of the Windows Phone adverts that's displayed on the TV in the States. There's also a chance, if you're voting in that one, to win a Lumia 920, but I guess it's the season for app contests, and yes, maybe it's because people are just looking a bit of extra interest in traffic, but let's keep optimistic and say actually it's about promoting some great apps that are available for Windows Phone, including of course the fantastic All About Windows Phone app, which you could listen to this very podcast with, and you can also read about all our other content as well with that.
I like being cynical. I mean, the fact that Baconit is going to win both contests is neither here nor there.
Well, that's possible. If Ewan's put his seer hat on and peering into the future, I think we have to wait and see, because it's all democratic. It's voted on by the users in both cases.
and it's counted by an American computer. That's what makes it democratic.
As we just lose our entire US audience, thanks to Ewan.
Only the Republicans. The Democrats are all nodding and going, yeah. Okay, shall we move away from American politics to European politics and the Spanish coast and our final look at MWC?
Yes, we can certainly do that. I promised in the last couple of podcasts that we'd come back to MWC because there's a few things that I wanted to talk about. But is there anything on your list, Ewan, that you wanted me to talk about?
I think, yet again, how important is it for everybody in the industry to get into one place? Because, you know, we always joke that people try and do the phone announcements just before or just after, and nothing really happens there, and the big names don't come along. But it's still a very important point in the calendar for physical contact. And, you know, I do find it strange that the world of connected communications, the thing where there is most sort of, are we all going in the right direction? It's when everybody can just put their phones away in their pockets. I just love that idea. And it's still very important, isn't it?
It is. I mean, when you're covering it from a media point of view or as press, obviously all the attention is on kind of the news. And that's how the outside world tends to see MWC. But in fact, that's really only one component of it. I think more important is all the meetings that go on. It's not just at the venue itself. A lot of the big companies will, you know, hire out a hotel and will be having meetings in towns, you know, or going out for meals at restaurants. So both the formal and the informal contact. And, you know, that networking is probably the most important part. I mean, one person said to me, you know, this is the only time when everyone's in the same city at the same time, and I can get, you know, 20 times as many meetings done for the same amount of effort. And of course, there's also, you know, a buzz about the place. You can go and see some of the latest technology, stuff that you might not otherwise do, or meetings you might not otherwise set up. And so it really does shape the industry, not just from what's announced and what's on display, but actually all the meetings that are taking place. And actually probably Microsoft is one of the best examples of this time. You know, they didn't have a stand, they didn't have a press conference, there wasn't really much visible presence, but they'd actually taken over a hotel, you know, elsewhere in Barcelona, and they did hold a couple of events there, both for developers and a press kind of reception. But most it was, you know, and in this hotel there were the usual big Microsoft banners, Windows Phone branding all over the place, various meeting rooms and demo areas. But that wasn't public. That was all for kind of, you know, private meetings or invitation-only events. But it does underline how important it was. You know, Microsoft had spent a lot of money hiring out that hotel. And it was because, you know, that's the sort of place where it will meet with operators, it will meet with the device makers. You know, there's a certain amount that's, you know, of course, going on all the time. But the advantage of MWC is everyone's in the same place for a week.
It also means that all the hotel companies, all the airliners, all the pickpockets, they all know everybody's going to be in the same place for 1 week.
It does. And of course, the hotel prices go up and it gets very busy. And it is a weirdly international event because, of course, you've got, you know, a broad cross section of the audience. I mean, it does tend to be dominated by white male executives, probably between the ages of 30 and 50, let's say. And so it does, you know, there's a weird microcosm to it. And it's, you know, English, of course, is the language of the event. So despite the fact you're in Spain, you can walk in at 8 o'clock in the morning and then walk out at 8 o'clock, and you could be anywhere. I mean, it's the same as any conference in that sense. But it's particularly noticeable, you know, for something like this, which is, it's a huge event. I mean, it's very hard to get across the scale of it. For people who haven't been to trade shows, you know, it's even harder. Even for those who have been to trade shows, it's one of the world's biggest ones. There's 72,000 odd people. And what was unusual about it this time is it felt packed for nearly all 4 days. I mean, I've been to MWC quite a few times now, and it always used to be that the first 2 days were busy and the third day sort of got a bit quieter, and fourth day was very quiet. But this time it was busy right up until the last moment. You know, it's actually a reflection of something I'll talk about maybe a bit in a minute. Is MWC has kind of been continuously growing. It was in a new venue and it's all kind of contained in one place. And so there was both more room but less room to spread out. It sounds like a contradiction, but it's because of the nature of the venue. But it is also, it's kind of absorbing other industries. Convergence in smartphones is sort of also reflected in the industry itself. So, for example, there was a presence from the car industry. Ford had a big stand, for example, and telematics, you know, integration of putting SIMs into cars and all those kind of potential applications, that was there. Also the health industry, so, you know, it's the obvious things like Fitbit and other, you know, appliance type devices that are used for, you know, measuring your heartbeat. They were all there, but also just starting to see other health applications come in, you know, maybe more complex machinery, you know, actually from the health industry. And that's all part of this machine to machine connected stuff. So I putting a SIM card in, being able to monitor stuff from home, and geriatric care, all that kind of thing is there as well. And so, for me, who's kind of remembers MWC about, you know, the devices, and it was very mobile focused, it is a lot broader nowadays.
So what are the trends that are coming out? And let's keep the focus not very narrow on Windows Phone, but on the industry as a whole, because, you know, there is this change that I can see from the desk here in Edinburgh, that we're having the big companies, you know, really pushing forward. You know, Microsoft, Google with Android, and let's put BlackBerry in that pile as well. But you also have a lot of boutiques coming up. You know, you have Firefox OS, you have Ubuntu Mobile coming up, you have Jolla with Sailfish OS. There seems to be a sort of stratifying of mobile that I can see. Is that something that's echoed on the ground, or am I just making stuff up?
No, I think that's a fair comment. I mean, let's talk about that as a trend first. I mean, there is the obvious one I was just talking about, you know, expansion into new areas, and you could pick out telematics or health as particular trends. I think that's fair. But this broadening of platforms, I mean, in previous years, there was kind of a question about, is there going to be a third ecosystem? And that's, of course, still there. You know, who's it going to be? Actually, the general assumption seems to be now that it will be Windows Phone, and BlackBerry is kind of the one that has to prove their case. And most people seem to think they're going to become almost a boutique platform. But this idea of, you know, would lose some of the, you know, the variety of platforms just seems to have gone back a bit from the back burner. You know, people saying, actually, we think there'll be multiple platforms. And that was kind of reflected in the rise of new platforms. I mean, there was Ubuntu, which we talked a little bit about in the past. But actually, this was kind of the venue where Firefox had its big formal launch. And there were devices from various manufacturers, you know, like Alcatel and ZTE, and potentially Sony promising to do stuff as well. It was mainly, to be fair, the Asian manufacturers. But of all the stands, actually, Firefox, despite being tucked away in a remote hall, was one of the busiest. I kind of have my doubts about Firefox. I mean, it's, you know, based obviously on the browser, and it's very reliant on web technologies, and it's sort of targeting the feature phone space, but they also want to do smartphones as well. It's a slight dichotomy there, which I think is a question they'll have to answer. And I think it's less convincing in the smartphone space. In the kind of the mid-tier, kind of as a super feature phone, it's maybe got it's got potential there. You know, in the same way that Nokia's been pretty successful with its Asha-type devices, you know, Firefox could potentially come in there. But also, you know, we had kind of the MeeGo has, you know, evolved into Tizen from Samsung, and there's kind of more of that. That's not quite there yet, but Samsung, we're talking about how there'd be launching device, and of course Jolla, which is effectively another branch or fork from MeeGo. They were there maybe in a relatively small way, but quite a few people were talking about them, and there were various other, you know, mobile platforms just sort of beginning to emerge. Some of Chinese companies are, you know, talking about doing things with Android, and of course kind of in the same way that Amazon have done for their Kindle products. And there's just a bit of mention of other things, and, you know, the Chinese government developing a Linux platform as well. It just felt that there was this broadening out, this acceptance that it wouldn't just be down to a couple of platforms. And that's also partly, I think, you know, there was a recognition that Android, which often gets talked about as being one thing, is far from that. You know, it's not the fragmentation that so often gets talked about. It's the fact that, you know, there's Amazon's version of Android, then there's the version that exists in China, which basically doesn't have any Google services. When people usually talk about Android, you know, they think about the stuff that runs on maybe not the Nexus devices, but on, you know, the typical Android devices that run Gmail and Google Maps. There's a lot of Android devices out there that don't run that, and so that's also part of this kind of this spread, or this having a more heterogeneous industry, I guess, is probably the way to put it, rather than homogeneous. You know, before, everyone thought it was merging down into just a couple of things. There's this realization that, you know, mobile is still a very broad area. It's possible to put too much emphasis on that trend, and I actually think it's probably a healthy thing for Windows Phone, because there's less of a question, you know, is it relevant? And actually, you know, there's still this, it needs to get to 10, 20, 30, whatever percent. But if there's going to be more platforms, you know, this idea of a duopoly with iOS and Android is just starting to go away, I think. So you can put too much emphasis on it, and part of that's my own view, instead of doing a bit of crystal ball gazing.
The other thing, two things that I wanted to pick up just from what you said. The first one is that Android is still this lovely glue, but it seems to have moved up to the applications themselves. Well, let's take BlackBerry as a great example. The current announcement from their VP is that 20% of applications for the BlackBerry 10 are actually Android apps running in a compatibility mode. Sailfish and Jolla are going to be allowed Android apps to run in compatibility mode. Tizen has the ACL layer, which again means that all those applications written for stock Android would run on some mythical Samsung Galaxy TouchWiz Tizen capable device at the end of the year. I find that really interesting. We'll talk about middlewares later on for the engines, but I suppose that Android becomes an almost default language for developers as opposed to for the handsets now.
There is definitely the idea of this happening. I actually think it's a bit of a red herring, because when you look at the experience of those Android apps on other devices, they don't work well. There is a real jarring in the design language, and from the Windows Phone point of view, where there is this very tightly defined language, and actually it's quite well adopted by all the developers, you know, it feels, you know, particularly bad. Some people say, oh, it doesn't matter as long as the app exists. I'm not one of those. And obviously, actually, this 20% figure you talked about for BlackBerry, the executive kind of came out and said that because they were being criticized that all of their apps on the 100,000 figure were just quick Android ports. I'm not sure I actually believe the 20% figure. From what I've seen, it looks like it's a bit higher, but you know, we'll take them at their word. But you're right.
If you want to take them at their word, though, you know, when they had 70,000 apps, they said it was 40% Android apps, which is 28,000. So 8,000 apps have suddenly gone missing. I mean, that's some spectacular rounding error if that's the case.
Yeah, you do wonder about these things. But I mean, anyone who's used the Q10 will know that, you know, the apps in that store do vary enormously.
I've used the Z10. I've got a Z10 here. We're not Q10.
Oh, sorry, Z10. I mean, I did actually see a Q10 at MWC.
What's the keyboard like?
I was really, really impressed by it. Cool. I think they've done a great job on the design. But it was funny, you know, it's almost like BlackBerry want to ignore it. They want everyone to use the touch device. And when speaking to some executives, you know, we think people will fall in love with touch. I actually think there's a pretty sizable minority out there that are really keen to get their hands on the QWERTY device.
Yep.
And it's going to be a problem in one sense, because of course you end up with a different experience, and can you do a single software platform? You know, Nokia certainly had that issue with things like the E6 and maybe the N8 as two devices. But this idea of, you know, app platforms, and you know, Android being the latest one of them, I mean, it's a neat idea because obviously it's good for developers, but ultimately the experience doesn't seem to work very well. And I think what we may see is, you know, more middleware type approaches, which you know, try and have a common core, and indeed that's actually what native code is about a lot of the time, and it's particularly relevant again to talk about that later. But you still need to do a UI and work on kind of the platform integration independently. I think that will still be a thing, but what's interesting in all of this is applications are completely accepted. You know, there is a lot of emphasis on that as the way to differentiate devices from all manufacturers. I mean, Nokia had quite a few apps that they were talking about. You know, they showed off some of their latest in the location suite. Actually had the rebranding over to here was announced at MWC. And they were actually, they're getting more tightly integrated. They're introducing LiveSite, for example, into here maps. It's not gone live yet. It should be sometime in the next few weeks. And that's kind of an augmented reality view. And that was sort of being held up as, you know, we've got the best in class maps experience on our devices. But equally well, you know, Samsung were doing stuff with, you know, health. Even the Chinese manufacturers were saying, you know, we're putting some custom apps on and services. You know, HTC were doing the same thing associated with their Zoe camera. They were doing a Zoe Share service, for example. And there's definitely this idea that there's a maturity. You know, it's accepted. It's not kind of the hype thing it used to be. And of course, there's the big app area of the show, and there's app developer conferences going on. there's still some questions about how you monetize this, and the most successful ones do seem to be from brands and services rather than maybe direct sales. Of course, there's always going to be some examples of that, but there's definitely still a question around all of that, I think it's fair to say. I mean, picking out just some other trends, security, that was another one. Samsung, for example, were announcing Knox and sort of building on their secure Android, their safe technology, which basically takes specific Samsung devices and say that, you know, these are secure to use for business. Nokia sort of did take the time a little bit to talk about how their devices running on Windows Phone had good business services and were, you know, the various encryptions, all the stuff that's built into Windows Phone, which I think might become a more significant advantage going forward. NFC was really big at the show, and that was really being pushed by the GSMA, you know, being able to buy your lunch using an NFC-enabled phone, you know, tags everywhere for finding out information. You could use your phone to get into the show itself, kind of as a, you know, your lanyard and badge. You actually still needed it. Have a listen to the 361 podcast that I did with Ewan McLeod and Ben Smith about that, because actually we found the NFC experience a bit lacking. But it does tell me that it's on the way for consumers, and it actually feels like Bluetooth was, you know, maybe 10 years ago. It's a technology that's still finding out what are the right applications, how you implement it in a user-friendly way. And I think it's fair to say there's a lot of work to do. There was also, you know, a big emphasis on kind of grey market phones. What I mean by that is phones for maybe the more mature person, you know, 60 plus. You know, Fujitsu were announcing a phone with a sort of dedicated Android UI, kind of big target areas, and they also had a tablet as well. It was actually kind of the next generation on from their Raku Raku symbol phone that was powered by Symbian. But equally well, there's Emporia, who's kind of specialized in these kind of devices, announcing their first touch device. And I thought that was interesting, that touch had now become acceptable as an easy to use phone. You know, it wasn't just about big buttons. And, you know, inevitably, it was kind of the rise of the Chinese manufacturers. You know, outside of Nokia, there weren't an awful lot of handset announcements, with the exception of the big Chinese manufacturers. So Alcatel did a whole bunch of announcements. That's TCL, Huawei, and kind of the usual suspects, ZTE, and also a lot of small brands. They were all announcing kind of Android devices for the most part. They did feel a bit samey, you know, high specification. So in that sense, you know, feature packed, but you could have taken the logo of one and put it on another and you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference, which is actually why Nokia got so much attention for its handsets, despite the fact they weren't high end. You know, the 16 quid phone, the 103, got, you know, got a lot of attention, but there was also the 301, I think it was, and of course the Windows Phone device, which we've mentioned previously. But they did seem to kind of win that fight for, you know, what's the most interesting handset to be announced, with maybe, you know, an honourable mention for the HTC One, which was actually announced before the show, so doesn't really count. So hopefully that's given you a bit flavour of MWC. You know, we've actually mentioned it in quite a lot of our news stories recently. There's various things that appear. I mean, Nokia had new apps, GlamMe, that's actually now available. But also it was announcing a whole load of partnerships with third parties. And we're starting to see Nokia do more and more of this. And it was kind of interesting talking to some of the developer executives at Nokia. You know, it was very much, we're doing these partnerships in collaboration. We're trying to create the best experience on Windows Phone. But we're trying to find ways that work for the, you know, the brands or the companies involved. And it can be about finding the right business model, you know, the right marketing or distribution. And so the Burton app was one of those that's come out, well worth checking out. It does some innovative stuff with imaging, but there was also Job Lens, which was kind of aggregation of data and augmented reality to help you, you know, find the ideal job. And there's more of these coming. I mean, the most recent was just announced a few days ago, was a partnership with Zinio, who do digital newsstands. Basically, they create, sell and distribute digital versions of printed media, so magazines, books and various other things. They're, you know, big on other platforms, but they've partnered with Nokia to kind of create the next generation of their product, and they're trying to find ways of, you know, doing more than just having a digital version of the magazine. They're doing kind of a story flow type approach, which will bring in content from various magazines. But what's of interest there is a partnership with Nokia, and there was, you know, Nokia driving an awful lot of this, something that Microsoft kind of used to do, and to be fair, is still doing. But it's kind of I think, a clue to how important Nokia finds these app partnerships. And, you know, that kind of also applies to games, and we'll talk about that in the second half of this podcast. But if there was one thing I kind of took away was, you know, the speed at which Nokia was doing those deals and those partnerships had kind of increased substantially. It was about filling out the catalogue, but making kind of the Lumia devices quite aspirational in some cases, because, you know, these deals aren't going to suddenly massively boost the catalogue size, but they are going to put some really important apps in place. And actually, Zinio, I think, is a great example because it puts in functionality that isn't there in the platform and actually is on iOS in the form of Newsstand and arguably Android as well with the Google Play distribution of magazines and books. So keep an eye on that particular angle, because that was interesting as well to me. As I say, we will mention some of the other things there with accessories. We want to review the wireless car charger at some point. That was a great combination of technologies, really nice accessory. That should be out in the next month or so. So hopefully we can have a review on the site, and we'll be reviewing the handsets as well, of course.
And do you have a car to review it in?
Yes, just for the time being. It's still just about behaving.
Hey!
But if you want to get more MWC, go and listen to the 361 kind of special episodes from, which is recorded with Ewan McLeod and Ben Smith, and that will give you a real flavour for the show and also talk about some of the broader topics that I've just mentioned in passing here.
And because that Ewan gets final edit, you get trimmed down a bit.
Well, it's Ben that does all the editing, so he deserves the credit for all the hard work.
Yes, Ben, I can just imagine. I can, yes.
Yeah, just imagine Ewan 2 and me, and Ben has to edit it.
I'm imagining it now and realizing I don't have to, and now I'm quite happy and mellow, and I might just play a game. Right, shall we go from the three-letter conference to three-letter conference?
We shall. GDC.
Yes. GDC, which stands for?
Game Developer Conference.
Which was taking place in?
San Francisco, Moscone Center.
And it's very important. Well, quite important.
It's important for the games industry, and given how much mobile has grown for games, it's actually, you know, quite an important mobile event as well now.
Yeah, and I'm going to put this straight away into perspective. One of the phrases that Microsoft came out in their presentations, a third of all downloads from the Windows Phone Store are originate from games, but 60% of the revenue comes from games. And I just find that a really, really interesting differentiation. It's not a one-to-one relationship. You know, gaming is providing twice as much effort in terms of raising money for developers, and obviously per se for Microsoft as well with their cut to run the store, than other applications. I would have thought it would have been the other way around, Rafe. I thought it would have been maybe two-thirds for games and a third of the revenue, but it's not. Can you think of any sort of rational explanation, rule of thumb, why would that be? Or are we going to need to be quite complicated and break out stats and breakdowns and things?
Well, I can give you the simple answer is that people are more willing to pay for games than they are for apps. And that's why you get that result. I think it's because it's kind of entertainment content. And, you know, I sometimes regard games as this kind of disposable content. You know, people, it's like watching a film or reading a book. You know, you go through games and you play them for a little while, you move on to something else, and so you tend to, you know, do that throughout your ownership of a device, whereas apps tend to be serving a very specific need, and quite often you'll get down to just using maybe five or six apps that are your absolute favorites, and those are the ones you have to have, and you may not go and look for new apps all that often unless you've got a specific need. So I suspect a lot of this is to do with kind of the pattern of device ownership. So early on you may be downloading an equal number of apps and games, but that apps number will gradually trail off. You still look for new stuff, but games is kind of a continuous consumption pattern. I don't know whether that's true or not. That's kind of my speculation. But thinking about, you know, my behavior, I'm actually the inverse of that. I don't spend all that much time on games. I'm more interested in apps, but I know a lot of people, you know, games are the most important thing, which is why kind of the introduction of Windows Phone 8 has been so important, because it introduced native code and thereby opening up the support for the gaming middleware. And really, that was the big thing that Microsoft was pushing at GDC as far as Windows Phone was concerned.
So let's put that into perspective, because there are a number of game titles released as well, but let's talk about middleware, and then we can say, oh, an X game that was announced used this bit of middleware. In the old days, you had your block chart of your hardware, then the operating system, then the user interface layer, and then stuff. What you have with middleware is it kind of sits between the code and the guts of the operating system. So, for example, rather than code up a bit of things, let's take an easy one, like draw a triangle, it's a graphical thing. You don't have to describe it. You just say to the middleware, I need a triangle there, and it will do it much faster in a much more efficient way. And it does this for a lot of functions that are useful for gaming, doesn't it, Rafe?
It does. I mean, essentially, if you think about a game, many of the graphics creation bits are going to be common between all of them, and even certain elements of gameplay. And so middleware effectively abstracts a lot of those things that you'd have to do yourself or implement, as you say, a triangle drawing routine, and just makes it easy. It is obviously a little bit more complicated than that. But what's also important about them is they tend to be common between platforms. And so you write your kind of common code, and you can use it on iOS, you can use it on Android. It'll often be used on the consoles as well. The Wii, the PlayStation can be used on desktop Windows. And now, because Windows Phone has this support as well, it can be used on Windows Phone as well. What that means is it's much easier to port a game to one of the platforms that supports this middleware, because essentially all you have to do is kind of optimize it for that platform, maybe redo a little bit of UI, but the core game engine and all the intelligence and often a lot of the graphic assets as well, you can port a game in a couple of days that otherwise you'd have to rewrite from the ground up. And we've talked about this in the past with Angry Birds, and that's a good example. But Windows Phone 8 now has this support for middleware. It's taken a little while to get there. I mean, it's launched 4 months ago, and most of the middleware isn't mature now, but there's probably a couple we should talk about.
Yeah, let's start with the least mature one, but probably the one that console gamers should be aware of, which is Havok. Now, Havok hasn't got any games released at GDC, but it did have a very impressive tech demo out there. And Havok drives a lot of first-person shooters on things like the Xbox and the PlayStation 4. It's a choice of tool, but a lot of developers out there will be aware of this tool, and the fact that there's a beta means we might not see anything straight away, but I'm sure that they will just be sort of pinging your corner and going, if we just drop it on the top, how much work does it do? Does it run straight out the door where we just need to worry at the edges? So Havok was the one that caught my eye, but it's probably better if we start with the bigger name in terms of mobile gaming, Rafe, which is the Unity engine, because that has made a huge difference almost straight off. You mentioned Drift Mania Championship in the last podcast, but Fling Theory, Orcs Must Survive, and probably the biggie, Temple Run, all running on the Unity engine, all now available on the platform. These are impressive names.
They are, and these are games that people are aware of on other platforms, and their arrival on Windows Phone is a good thing. It kind of addresses this Windows Phone isn't very good for games. It's still early days, and what Unity actually announced at the show was that essentially that the beta program is now open to all, but it is still a beta program. It's not yet mature. I suspect one of the reasons for this is they're still working on optimizing it for Windows Phone. You can kind of see an example of this in that some of these games that you've just mentioned need a gigabyte of RAM to run, which means they don't run on the devices with 512 megabytes of RAM. So, for example, the 620, the Lumia, or the recently announced Lumia 720 or the HTC 8S, that may well get fixed in time as they kind of work out how can we do this without using so much memory. But it's notable that all of these games that you've mentioned are ones that exist elsewhere and have been ported across just as I was describing. And a couple of cases they've actually said, it's taken us just a day or so to get it running on the mobile platform. Will be some follow-up work to this, of course there will, to kind of get it running smooth and to make it look nice and get round off the rough edges. But you can see the difference, and that's why these games start appearing. And so previously Microsoft kind of had a technical issue why these games weren't appearing on Windows Phone, essentially developers saying, no, I'm not going to code it from the ground up. I think quite understandably so. Now, actually, the problem will be that Microsoft needs to persuade developers that there's a business case to port to Windows Phone, because the technical barriers have started going away. It is more complicated than this because there are other factors involved, and people will bring up things like OpenGL versus DirectX. But the advent of middleware, which Unity is a good example and probably one of the most high profile, is good news for the platform, and it means there's a lot more games, which is why suddenly this week we've got a whole bunch of games. You did mention Havoc briefly. I mean, the reason that's a kind of a big deal is that it's been big on PC and consoles, but they were announcing Project Anarchy, which is going to be a mobile version of that sort of game production engine, as they refer to it as. And so bring some of the technologies that allows them to create what they refer to as kind of cinematic, rich 3D immersive games, that kind of console-like game experience, which we mentioned a little bit in the last podcast, you know, moving over from the casual gaming into this deeper, more immersive solution. And what's interesting about, you know, this Project Anarchy from Havoc is they're actually announcing it with support for iOS and Android, as well as, I think, the PS Vita and a couple of other devices as well. But Windows Phone is in there too. And so the decision has been made to kind of promote Windows Phone into that first, you know, league, that the Premier League of support for games. And, you know, one of the developers I spoke to about this basically said, now that there's enough Windows Phone devices out there, of course we'll include it in our kind of production roadmap. And that will mean that the games will come out in a much more timely fashion, because Temple Run, you know, has got talked about a lot, really high profile game. But it is almost 2 years since it came out on iOS, and there's, you know, been Temple Run 2 came out, I think, 4 or 5 months ago. So, you know, excitement for Windows Phone users who really wanted to get their hands on Temple Run, but it's kind of muted a little bit by how long it's taken. The fact that these engines are now here means that in the future we'll see more releases happen kind of at the same time. And, you know, Drift Mania Championship 2, which we mentioned, there's kind of the sequel to that that's coming out. And the developers have specifically said it's going to basically launch on all platforms at the same time. And I suspect that's something we'll see more and more of.
And it's also just not those big name titles as well. I mean, if you look at Oryx Must Survive, it's a nice title on Android, but it never really set the world on fire. But it does mean that the developers can reach out to that huge platform that Windows Phone is hoping to get. It's not as big as Android by at least, an order of magnitude now, Rafe?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. But you're right, it's not just these kind of the big game developers, it's the indie game developers, and in some ways they're more important. And they have less resources, and so this idea of being able to port easily is almost more important for them.
Yeah, and of course, third engine, which we can bring out from the internet, is the, I just love this, we've just had Havoc, we've had Unity, and then we have Marmalade.
And guess what? It's a British company now. There's a shocking surprise.
Yeah, what gave that away? It's just like, really? Again, another middleware engine. There's quite a bit of choice out there. Some really good titles coming out there. Again, Sixth Planet, Propel Man. Probably, again, the sort of middle indie titles. And just a really, really nice environment to work in. It means that the developers can spend more time working on the game, the graphics and the story, rather than the sort of nitty-gritty of actually coding off as well. And I'm just really pleased to see all of these come out for Windows Phone.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sixth Planet's a great example. You know, the production kind of quality on that is quite frankly amazing. And to be honest, the game itself, it's, you know, it's kind of a Lunar Lander style thing, which is interesting enough, and it's been really beautiful and great attention to detail. But there's kind of a story that goes along with it, and it's done in the kind of style of cutscenes in a comic book graphics, effectively. It looks absolutely gorgeous, but all of that, of course, is done, you know, using the gaming engine, or at least that's powering an awful lot of it. And so when it comes to porting it, it becomes quite easy to do so. That's where this comes in, because as you say, you can then invest more in those graphic assets and maybe in the core gameplay as well, and not worry so much about, well, how am I technically going to implement this on each of the platforms, because you kind of drop it in. And you know, in all of these gaming sort of creation, this middleware, effectively you build it for multiple platforms. So you'll build it once for iOS, build it for Windows Phone, build it for Android. You know, there may be some tweaking you need to do each time. In fact, there is tweaking you need to do each time. But as I say, so the commonality using 95% of the same code, that does make an enormous difference. And so, you know, all these games we're talking about, you know, yes, some of them are coming late, but the fact they're here at all means that this is technically now possible. And so I don't really think the conversation should be about, oh, it's late. It's the fact it's now possible. And in the future, we will see, you know, probably releases happen at roughly the same time. It will be interesting to see how much that happens, because obviously it does depend on the developer opting to build a Windows Phone version as well. And I think that's where, you know, Microsoft will have to kind of, you know, put its efforts to kind of convincing them there is the business case, because, you know, it's an addressable market thing. There's 20-odd million Windows phone devices out there. There's hundreds of millions of Android and iOS. So, of course, they're the bigger addressable markets, potentially more money. But then you kind of come back to what sometimes gets talked about. You know, Windows phone users, like iOS users, seem to be more willing to pay money for games, which is, you know, maybe a motivator for the developer, but it depends on the model you take, because quite a few of these ones we mentioned are freemium titles where have some kind of in-app purchase mechanism to, you know, unlock extra characters or content or levels, which I think is an interesting way to do it. You know, some traditional gamers prefer to buy the game outright up front and then not have any more charges. And we talked about Game Lost Real Football as an Xbox title having that issue. Temple Run is another one of these. You know, you collect coins as you run along, and they get you extra power-ups and you can unlock extra characters. But if you want to, you can spend real money to buy more coins and have that happen more quickly. But that, you know, the fact that Windows Phone supports in-app purchases now, that's all part of what Microsoft has been putting in place. And it's taken a long time to get here. So, you know, yes, it's the middleware engines. Yes, it's the in-app purchases. Yes, it's having the App Store work and the trial process and all of that. It's about expanding into more countries, support for more languages. And it's a problem that Windows Phone, I think, has more generally. It has to get all the elements in place before you can, or all the ingredients in place before you can make the cake. Yet a lot of people are going, oh, it's not doing... Often it's not a choice saying, oh, we're not doing it. It's because it's just not quite ready. And it's this maturity thing that we've talked about before. And I do feel, you know, GDC kind of marks this point where Windows Phone becomes a lot more mature for gaming and games developers.
Certainly, it does feel like you now have a kitchen with all the ingredients, and a couple of the development houses have decided to do a recipe that they know very well. For example, the first Temple Run. Yes, as we've already mentioned in the podcast, Temple Run 2 came out on other platforms in January. But the Temple Run codebase is something that would be completely understood by developers. So any sort of variants or problems or issues that they would have when they're porting that would be down to the vagaries of the platform. So they could take little notes and go, so the Windows Phone build process has this little wrinkle and this little wrinkle, and they can put it next to the wrinkles that they have with the Android and iOS. The key for me will we see Temple Run 2? Will we see Temple Run Oz? You know, how fast will Windows Phone be released alongside iOS and Android? Which is why I find it very, very interesting that Gravity Guy 2 is making its mobile debut on Windows Phone. Admittedly, only for a month, and then we'll see on iOS and Android as well. But again, I get kicking the tires. It's like we understand how the platform works. What happens if we release on here first? What differences does that make? What sort of pricing and income differences that make to just a regular release going on as well? So yeah, you're right, we do have all the ingredients, and people are just trying basic recipes at the moment, and they're either going to decide, I really like this kitchen, or they're not. And I suppose that has to be a worry as well. It could be after 3 months of, you know, we've tried our main titles, we've tried them, and we would expect them to sell this much, you know, percentage wise, and they haven't. So thanks but no thanks. It could be that in 3 months it's a game over.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I don't think it's sort of game over, but you know, there is this
danger. Dear Microsoft, please insert more coins for another life.
Well, yeah, actually that's probably a better way of putting it. You know, having the ingredients in place, you know, as I say, the technical capability does not mean there's a business case. And so we're getting quite excited about this and talking about this, you know, dramatic voices and all of that. I think it's
just... In a world where there was a middleware engine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's justified. But make no mistake, there is still, you know, a lot of work to do. And it's about this addressable market side. It's about the business case. But it does feel like... you know, that will come in time. I mean, it's the old chicken and egg problem that Windows Phone has more generally. And of course, platforms rise, and of course they fall. But you need to do the basic hygiene first. And that's what this is about. You know, another example of this, you know, there's the Cocos 2D X for Windows 8. That's basically an open source 2D game engine that got an update. That was also announced at GDC. Power A actually announced that they were adding Windows Phone support for their MOGA game controller. Now, this MOGA game controller, it basically has a thing that you can clip your phone on the top and use a traditional kind of gaming joypad, or a bit like a control from your console, and use that to play games on your mobile phone. I can't say I'm completely convinced by this myself. I don't want to carry around a controller. It's actually more maybe aimed at when you're playing these games than connecting to a TV or something. But it connects via Bluetooth. But the fact that they are adding Windows Phone support, I think, is quite notable. You know, we'll probably see more and more of this stuff as, you know, companies sit and go, yep, okay, it's now got to the point where we want to support it. And it's been a lot of work to get this far, and there's still a lot of work to go. And as I say, I think the biggest challenge will be, you know, Microsoft will basically have to spend its time going to developers, yes, you do want to support Windows Phone, here's why, here's some statistical evidence, you know, here's some commercial evidence, you'll make money if you do it this way. In economic terms, the important thing is that the additional cost of supporting Windows Phone isn't that much, and so the return it has to make isn't enormous. The margins, well, it depends on what margins you're going to be going for, but as more devices come out, that proposition becomes more and more attractive. But don't think of it as, you know, creating a game from scratch. The cost of porting, you know, is much less. You know, it's one of the reasons that people will maybe start on iOS and then port to Android. If they were just standing in isolation, it wouldn't matter, which again underlines the importance of this middleware. And, you know, there is this OpenGL directive thing. We won't get into that on this occasion, but hopefully we've kind of given a good overview of this. I mean, we should maybe talk about the other Xbox Live release this week, because it kind of broke new ground in a couple of ways, isn't it, Ewan?
Indeed, yes. This is the one that's quite pricey and quite large. Is this the one you're referring to?
I am, yes.
Indeed, yeah, because there was a couple of Nokia-only releases as well. But Chaos Ring. Chaos Ring is huge. You are going to need something like 4 gig of free storage space on your internal drive just to get this thing installed. And again, this ties back to the issue that we have with issues in Windows Phone 8, which hopefully are going to be fixed up by some upcoming software updates. It's an RPG game. It's from Square Enix, who are also the company that many will recognize behind the Final Fantasy series. And look, it's from the screenshots, it looks sumptuous. It looks gorgeous. I've only got an 820 here that won't actually install it, because I don't want to reset my 820 to get back 5 gig of memory so I can install a 4 gig thing and lose all the game saves from everything else. Again, you see, it really is a title that is pushing right up to the edge of the platform. It's already available on iOS and Android. It has been for some time. And again, much like Temple Run, the second version is out now as well. And interestingly here, Rafe, it's only available on Windows Phone 7.5. at the moment. So even if I could clear the 820, it ain't going on there. At least not yet. I would expect that to jump up in the near time. I think the important thing here is it is another big brand name coming to the platform. It is another big brand developer who is coming to the platform and actually committing to something that has taken some time. And it's Windows Phone 7.5, so there will be a huge amount of middleware help here. It will be done from the ground up. It's not my perfect cup of tea in terms of game styling, but I am very, very glad to see that it's here. And do you want to talk about the $9.99 price?
Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, it obviously gets some reaction, because as far as I'm aware, that's the most expensive Xbox Live title to date. I'm sure it's going to come over to Windows Phone 8 in due course. But it reflects this kind of change in games that we talked a little bit about last week. And people, are you willing to pay that price? I have to admit, I would be reluctant simply because I don't play games that much. But if you treat it as kind of, you know, a really immersive, in-depth title that's going to take you hours to complete, and you regularly buy, you know, you used to buy cartridges for your Game Boy or your Nintendo system, or, you know, you play on the PlayStation Portable or something like that, you go, ah, that's not very much. You know, actually, that's a bit of a bargain, because this is, you know, a big game. It's not just a sort of casual play for a few minutes. I think it will attract a different sort of user, and of course the unit sales might be a lot less, but the thing is, even if you sell 10% of the level of, you know, a 99-cent title, you're going to actually have the same sales figures or revenue at the end of the day. So I actually think it's a healthy thing, even if I'm sure there's some people out there screaming, way too expensive. You know, these games cost a lot to develop, and as any economist will tell you, there's various ways to have a pricing strategy. You can, you know, price it low and try and sell loads of copies, or you can price it, you know, at a higher level and just sell fewer copies. And you know, you have to find the point of demand which actually will maximize your profits. And I suspect for a game like this, because of its nature, actually the higher price point makes sense, and it's, you know, economic theory 101.
It's almost like a Laffer curve, but using the game price rather than taxation, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, this is sort of price optimization, effectively.
Right. And we also have to remember, Square Enix did release a Final Fantasy title on Xbox Live, so they will have a number of data points already in terms of how many people are aware of their name, how many people are actually downloading and everything, and that will have fed into that equation as well, and they would have come up with a number, and then they would have probably rounded it up so they aren't charging £8.76 or something stupid like that. I'm just really pleased with it. It does feel like the gaming has turned a corner on Windows Phone, and we're now at least in the same year as other platforms, and that's not to discount the efforts from lots of mini developers out there that just do standalone games. A couple of them have emailed in between, emailed us at the site, so that we've got a new game out, have a look at that. Gravity Fall, as little school project, has come out recently as well. There's space for everybody in the church, and that is a wonderful thing to have, but you know, sometimes you just need a bit of flag waving at the top. You need the same titles as other platforms. You need to have things like Gravity Guide 2 coming first to the platform, in the same way that for a long time we said, you know, will we see Angry Birds Seasons, Star Wars Angry Birds Space, which we have now. It's again, it comes back to this, and I think this ties also back into MWC, that a smartphone now is very much an app phone. And to push back even further, Symbian was never really about the applications. It was all about having a good set of core applications on the device. And yes, you could install third-party applications, but the support that we're seeing now, I think if Nokia had stayed with Symbian, we wouldn't have seen with Symbian. The boat was missed on terms of that OS. Windows Phone, very much built for applications, very much built for moving information and things all around. And as you know, Android and iOS, very much for the applications. BlackBerry doing their best to push that we have applications, even though their strengths are still in the hub and the messaging and everything. And the new handsets that are coming up are saying, look, we can run all the Android games. It's okay. You're not going to miss anything coming through. You know, apps are here to stay. We've seen a third of the apps from the store are games, but they provide 60% of the profit, 60% of the revenue from Windows Store. It's a very important area. And of course, it's a very fertile ground for pushing the envelope of the platform. You know, you're not going to really push the graphical engines if you do another note-taking application. But if you decide to do MicroProse F1 Grand Prix 2014, you are really going to need to push the limits of the system. And that creates better techniques for better for programmers, which actually feeds back and makes better applications all told.
That's right. And I think the important thing is it's about the perception of the platform as well. Because if you think about the apps and the games that sort of enter the popular consciousness, it's very much games that seem to take the lead. And obviously that's something that Windows Phone hasn't had. And it almost had a reputation, you know, it doesn't have the thing. You know, of course, there are some gaps still, you know, people talk about Instagram or something like Vine. And that's always going to be the case. I think, you know, until Windows Phone gets nearer to market share of iPhone or you know, passes, say, I don't know, 15, 20% point, of course, there's always going to be an addressable market that's bigger elsewhere, and so apps will go there first. You know, it's a natural thing. I mean, the gap will come down because of all the things we've been talking about now, but I think also, you know, people go, oh yeah, it's got some great games on it. Yes, it does have Temple Run. Yes, it does have Angry Birds, you know, and so that will change the way people think about it. You know, it becomes easier to recommend it for anyone who's, you know, really into games. And you're right, it is, you know, there is this change of sort of app and game centricism, which I think people have been around the smartphone industry, you know, it's absolutely accepted, but, you know, not everyone kind of thinks that way. And I'm kind of always the first to say, let's not get too much hype on apps and games. There's a lot of other things going on in the phone. And I continue to maintain that. And I think there's still, in some senses, too much emphasis on apps and games in this phone X doesn't have this, when a lot of the time what you're using the phone for, it's not really, you know, it's how good's the camera or how good's the call quality. And that I think sometimes gets missed out when people are assessing the phones. But don't get me wrong, it's not that I don't think they're important, and which is why we spent an entire podcast, you know, in the second half, actually, not an entire podcast, talking about the games. You know, something personally I'm not terribly interested in one sense, but I think it's a really vital component to have. And so I know there's a lot of people out there who are a little bit skeptical about apps and games, but they have become, you know, an integral part of that smartphone experience. And so it's important to address the experience properly. And, you know, Microsoft was getting there for apps, and I still think there's work to do. There's some gaps to fill in, but that's the chicken and egg situation. With games, you know, there was this problem that there wasn't this technical capability to do so. And now it's in the same situation as apps. It's kind of the, if you like, it's the chicken and egg phase. Actually, games will have an advantage over apps because so much of the code can be common because of this middleware stuff. And it's not that there's not middleware for, you know, apps. There is in some instances, but it doesn't work quite the same way. And often, you know, the UI component or some other part of it, the way it's implemented, it's just not done in quite the same way. So it'd be interesting to see if games suddenly start looking, you know, kind of more healthy than the app situation. But as Ewan says, there is this interesting divide between the two. And just a reminder, that's a third of the downloads of games and 60% of the revenue. And there is a reason that apps and games are split up in the Windows Phone Store, despite the fact, you know, some people just see games as a category of apps, but actually there's a lot more to it than that.
Indeed. So as we close off the podcast, it's App of the Week, and I don't think you could be in a more appropriate space at all, could it, Rafe?
Absolutely not.
Now, I was going to drop a game in here as we started this. I was going to pop Zoomer's Revenge in here because I'm still playing that Nokia EA exclusive title on that one. Very, very much recommended and a good, nice, solid, able to dip in and out or play a long gaming session. But I'm not. I'm going to go with Live Tile Countdown, which I think you mentioned in Flow a while ago. It's very simple. You tell it a date and it gives you a live tile and it tells you how many days until that event. And that's it. I love it. It's simple. It gives me a live tile. At the moment, it says, well, we're recording this on Friday, it says 50. Now, I know what that means, but I don't think anybody else does.
I suspect it's Eurovision related.
It is, yes. It's days until the Eurovision Grand Final. 50 days to go. But again, personalization, an application that provides a service. It's very targeted and focused. It has the multiple tile sizes that you can. It certainly has the big, it doesn't have the wide one, but it has the medium one, which gives you the little text at the bottom, or it has the small one, which says just the number, and that's the one that I like to have on the screen as well. And I've been changing that, you know, it's like how many days until South by Southwest, how many days until my trip to Sweden, and so on. It's just nice. It's personal. It shows the lifestyle concept off. And, you know, people looking down my start screen just go, oh, it just says 50. But it means something to me. And I think that's important. It's an application that creates a big emotional link.
And my app pick this week is Lock Screenizer. What this does, very simple process. It just selectively darkens a portion of a photograph or a picture to make it more suitable as a lock screen image. You can also have it optionally cycle through a whole list of images. So it's kind of one of these lock screen apps. But the thing is, when you're using your own photos for the lock screen, often you'll find that they're a bit light at the bottom. And so the text that's displayed along the bottom, that, you know, the timing, dating and other information, doesn't quite show up clearly. And so having an app that automatically kind of adjusts the photos so they look better, or you can rather read the text, it's a nice little extra. You know, it's a utility helper app. It's not an essential, but it caught my eye and I used it to set up a couple of my own pictures for the lock screen. And I said, I like the fact it can cycle through several pictures as well. I'm always switching these apps around. Quite a lot of the time I like using things like Weatherflow, because that's got a great lock screen integration and having a Bing picture of the day appear. But, you know, change things around. It's a free download from the Windows Phone Marketplace.
So there we go. Again, another personalization one. For me, I really still like Bing Picture of the Day. I've kept that. I mean, I've tried some of the other wallpaper applications and stuff, and they're nice and all. But I like Picture of the Day. I like, you know, getting up in the morning going, what is it? And there have been some really stunning ones over the last couple of weeks. So I'm actually going to mention, just to sneak in here, a little website as well. The Bing Image Archive, istartedsomething.com, holds that one. And it just literally shows shows you what all the previous images were. So you can go back and go, I remember that. It was, well, you know, rather than just have this ephemeral thing that appears, you can pop back and have a look at it as well. And handily, it shows you the differences between what the US picture of the day was and the UK picture of the day was as well. So if your Bing search screen is different to the start screen, you'll be able to work out which one is which. Yeah. Enjoying that immensely.
I do enjoy Bing picture of the day, and I will admit to pressing the search button sometimes just to see what the new picture of the day is and exploring with the little squares. It's an interesting touch. I mean, it obviously isn't adding any functionality, but I think it speaks to the way Microsoft approaches Windows Phone in general. It's sort of a user-centric experience, or as Microsoft like to have it, people-centric. I think those little touches often make the difference, and they kind of get poo-pooed elsewhere. But yeah, another vote here as a fan of Bing Picture of the Day. So people who are selecting the images, keep up the good work, please.
Yes, exactly. Because we had a link ages back in the website. There are only certain things that happen, and it's got to be culturally significant around the world. And there's a huge amount of thought that they put into that image as well. A bit like NASA's image of the day as well. And if you're looking for something over the weekend, it was at NASA or MoMA. Have you seen that online, Rafe? Nothing to do with Windows Phone. It shows you close-up pictures of either NASA's image of the days or images from the Museum of MoMA. Then you have to guess, is it something from space or is it something from Earth?
I'll have to check that out. Ah, I can just see it here. There's a game. So that's well worth checking out.
It's in
we
the
don't
game.
Just talk about Windows Phone.
No, but we put it into perspective.
Yeah.
Bit like the new Windows icon.
That's
hey!
That's right. Well, it's all time and dimensions in relative space.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah. And that was a bit obvious, wasn't it?
It was a bit obvious, but it's tomorrow and I'm really all excited. And Game of Thrones is back as well for our American listeners. So, yay! It's just one of those lovely weekends. Right, we're going to weigh and plan our cult weekend viewing with our little cult phone handsets, which are rapidly becoming quite popular. I'm Ewan Spence. This is his cue.
And this is Rafe Blanford, who forgot his cue.
And you're our listeners, who we will say thank you to. Very much appreciated. www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. Your comments are always welcome. You can leave your Twitters, Facebooks, and all of that back where you find us as well. Thank you very much for listening. Have a nice holiday weekend, assuming that we put this up on Friday. If not, hope you had a nice holiday weekend if we put this up on Monday. And if you're listening to us in 2015 because we've been caught in a horrible accident and you need our voice to synthesize us to go up on the Daily Mail page for an RIP, no.